You're listening to Right Where You Are, hosted by New York Times bestselling author, creator, and speaker, Jason Wright. With inspiring guest interviews and Jason's unique lens on life, this is the place to see the good in the world, to lift and be lifted, no matter your starting point, to make a difference that matters. And we'll do it all together, right where you are.
Hello, friend. Welcome back to Right Where You Are. This is Jason Wright. As always, if you wouldn't mind, just a quick favor here at the beginning, if you wouldn't mind rating and reviewing the show, particularly over on Apple Podcasts or really wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, I'd be super grateful. That is how our little show continues to grow the family. So if you do that for me, I would sure be thankful. Our guest today is easily one of the kindest and most genuine and authentic people I think that you could ever meet. He's also hilarious, and he is an accomplished stand-up comedian, a speaker, a writer, an actor, and he has performed before crowds all over the United States. He's also the host of his own podcast, Latter-day Lives. It is a weekly show with thousands of extraordinarily loyal listeners, including myself. In fact, I just listened to the Boyd Matheson episode, which is just maybe my favorite that you've ever done. It's so,
he's in my top.
So good.
Yeah, he's definitely in the top. He is amazing. Amazing,
man. I'm going to make sure that we link to your show and to that episode in particular in the show notes. I'd love to have him on sometime. Our guest today has written commercials and industrial films for all kinds of companies, the Yellow Pages, Novell, IBM, Dell, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he has written for some national touring comedians and some Vegas entertainers. He has been married to his wife, Vanessa, for 26 years, and they are the proud parents of 8 children they love very much. Our guest is quite passionate about Disneyland, travel, and barbecue in no particular order, but he's particularly passionate about adoption, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Our guest on Right Where You Are today is my friend Sean Rapier, and you're in for a treat. Welcome, Sean.
I'm so glad to be here with you, Jason, and I'm so glad that you do this. And I am a fan also. I got a chance to hear you with several guests as you were launching, and you're so natural. Like, this is so great. So thank you for having me on.
Well, the show wouldn't be here without your mentoring me there through some long, probably for you, excruciatingly long consulting
calls. I loved every one of those consulting calls. Really? That was a highlight, and you know, you're such a genuine guy. It's easy. Jason.
Well, I appreciate it. What I loved most is that as you were helping me along, even after being on the phone for whatever it was, 90 minutes at a shot, you'd say, now, look, if you hang up and in 2 minutes you think of something else, just call me right back. So I'm grateful for that. And our listeners should be grateful because really you've had such an influence on getting this thing off the ground. Now, before we dive in, friends, if you're listening right now and you are personally an advocate for adoption, or maybe you know someone whose life was changed by a loving family like Sean's, or if you just appreciate really inspiring stories of adoption and second chances and the miracles they provide, let me just invite you to hit the pause button on whatever you're listening on right now, whatever player you're using for the podcast, and just go share the episode right now. Text the link to someone, post it on social media, tag a friend, whatever, and then come right back. Right, Sean?
We'll wait. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. We're waiting.
I know you haven't done it yet, so don't pretend like you have. We're waiting. All right.
You know what? That one guy in Des Moines, he just did it. Thank you,
Des Moines comes through.
Always they come through. Look, my listeners, Sean, they know, my readers know that adoption has always been important to me. Christmas Jars, which really launched my career, is at its core a story of adoption. When I wrote it, I had a very good friend, Carrie Houston Telosco, who I'm sure is listening, who is going through the process of being reunited with her birth mother, birth family.
Beautiful.
Now, Christmas Jars, of course, is not a usual adoption story, and I don't recommend leaving your baby in a roadside diner.
Sure.
But still, I just have believed for so long in the power of adoption. And I know your journey, Sean, has of course changed your life and your children's journeys. So I think we have to start there. Tell us a little bit about your family and how they each ended up in your beautiful bunch.
Sure. Yeah. And this is something that's really important to know, is that I am not an adoption guy. So I'll preface with that, because I get a lot of people saying, "Oh, I don't know how you do it. We're not the adoption people." Neither was I either. Neither was my wife. And so we were just a normal young married couple living in the massive metropolis of Provo, Utah, and trying to kind of figure out our lives in our young 20s. My wife is what's called an occupational therapist, and it's like physical therapy, but with fine motor skills. She worked for the Provo School District. I was doing stand-up comedy. I was working for an acting agency, selling acting classes for them and doing some other things. And we were just this happy young couple getting ready to have kids, you know, and my plan was 2, maybe 3. My wife said 3, maybe 4, somewhere in there. And then one day that completely changed our lives, my wife came home and she said, there is a 1 and a 2-year-old. She was in the early education program. She said, there's a 1 and a 2-year-old who need a home. And they've been separated from their parents. Their parents have issues with substance and some mental health issues. And they are going to need to be adopted. Now, they were not legally clear at that time. They were still trying to reunify them with the parents. This came just out of left field. There is no way. We're not those people. And that was my initial response, was what? No, that's what other people do. There must be people who are just born into, hey, we're the adoptive parents type. And this was not for us. Now, at the time, it was interesting. When you're an actor, especially when you're really young, you're rarely just an actor or a comedian. You just don't make enough money. And so, you know, I was doing a lot of commercials. I was doing stand-up and private gigs for stand-up. But in my spare time, and you want to talk about the worst job in the history of jobs, I was selling frozen meat door to door, knocking on people's doors saying, would you like to buy some steaks? And that's what I was doing. And at the time, that is a very transient industry. You don't last very long selling door to door. And there's kind of a low barrier to entry with that job. And there was a couple that I was working with, and their life was just a mess. And they were telling me how they had lost their kids and how much they love them, and they were fighting to get them back. And it was a wild time in our lives. Well, I told my wife, no, we can't. She said, we need to adopt them because they're going to separate the little boy and the little girl. And these kids were both beautiful. But the little boy, who's 2, was autistic and had been through so much neglect in his short 2 years that he was very delayed and he had major anger problems. And they just said, you know, we're going to get the little girl adopted. We'll get her. At the time, again, they were just saying foster care, but the state was moving toward permanent separation from their parents. So I told my wife, I said, I don't think this is right. And she said, oh, that's great that you don't. What does the Lord think about all this? I hate that. So I, in a very dramatic, maybe John Hughes type of a scene, it was raining outside and I went for a walk in the rain on a baseball diamond for some reason and prayed my guts out. I mean, you know, the scriptures talk about wrestling with the Lord. I wrestled with the Lord and did not want an answer, but I finally got it, that these were our children. These were our kids. And that was the strong answer. And so we ended up spending some time with the kids. It was all wonderful. And then their foster mom brought them over for a visit as we were getting ready to become their foster parents. Now, their current foster mom really wanted to adopt them, but her husband just didn't feel like they could take that on. But they had to give them up as foster kids too, because they had a couple of other kids under the age of 5. And there was a law about how many kids you could have under the age of 5. Well, she came to our little starter home. It was a little 900 square foot home that was built in the 1920s, 30s. Anyway, an old home. And we were, you know, not a wealthy couple. And she saw us and thought, no, these guys are too young and too poor to take care of these kids. And so she actually went to one of her neighbors who's wealthy, who was looking to adopt 2 more kids. They had already adopted 2 kids. She went to them and said, why don't you adopt these 2 kids? And this other couple agreed. this foster mom then went to the state and said, if you give these two kids to the Rapiers instead of to my neighbors, I will sue the state. They're wealthier, they're older, they're, you know, they've already adopted two kids. You need to give them to them. And we got a phone call after all this prayer and confirmation they were our kids. We got a phone call that that said, hey, sorry, we're giving the kids to this other family. And this was a month before Christmas. We thought we were going to have Christmas with little kids. We were devastated. And there was, if I'm being honest, a lot of nights on my knees saying, what was this? What happened? I got a confirmation. These are our kids. About maybe a month and a half, 2 months later, I don't know. My wife knows all the timelines much better. She's good at keeping track of it. But a couple, maybe a month and a half later, we got a call saying that these other foster parents couldn't keep the kids. And this was shocking to me. Like, what are you talking about? They said, we've already had a staffing. You are the foster parents if you'll still take them. Well, I wanted to know what the backstory was. So we set up to meet up with those other foster parents that night. We went over to their home. And as we sat down with them, the mother just started to bawl, just cry her eyes out. And she said, I have two adopted kids. And I know that they're my kids. I know that they're my children. And she said, and then we brought these two kids, David and Krista, into our home. And she said, every night I would kneel down and pray with them. And every night I would say amen. And the spirit, the Holy Ghost, would whisper to me, these are not your children. And she said, I know what it's like to have my children. And these are not ours. And she said, it's so painful to have them here that I need them to find their real family. And so we went home and overwhelmed by the spirit that we were getting our children. The next day, we bought a toddler bed and a crib and a high chair. And I mean, I felt like we were running through Toys R Us and Babies R Us, just throwing cash in the air. And we stayed up till 3 a.m. building out a kid's room. And then we brought them home. Well, then we had our first meeting with the birth parents, and we walked in, and first of all, it must have been shocking to them that there's their occupational therapist. They had met my wife before. They knew her. Why is there their therapist in this meeting? But then I walked in, and guess what? The couple that I was working with at the meat place, it's them. I already knew them.
Oh,
and we worked together,
goodness,
selling meat door to door. I sat and listened to them. And so here they were going. And by that time I had left that job, but they were like, hey, here's a former coworker and my kid's therapist. But we already had a little bit of a bond. And unfortunately, the dad suffered from schizophrenia, and it was a lot of issues going on. So we tried to foster visits, but they told us flat out, you will never adopt these kids. There are kids, and we will fight it and fight it. And the state, and rightfully so, really tries to err on the side of the birth parents, whatever they can to, you know, reunify them. Mm-hmm. So one day I get a call. Now, here we are. We're parents. A lot to deal with. And there was a lot to deal with. David, our two-year-old at the time, if he was happy, he would show you by biting you. And if he was angry, he'd show you by biting you. And he couldn't talk at all. So if he was hungry, he'd bite you. I looked like I had been through a war, because no matter what, we'd be playing and wrestling or whatever, and he would bite. He was a handful. And so then I get a call one day, and my wife says, you need to get down to the courthouse now. They are ready to give up the kids for adoption. They don't want to fight it anymore. I rush over to the court, and there's birth mom, and she's crying her eyes out. Of course, birth dad's a little checked out, but birth mom is crying. And she says, I'm willing to do it to show them I love them, but I need three people to testify. This, she came up with this on her own. I need three people to testify that I love these kids. So my mom, my sister, and my best friend are all going to testify. And great, but best friend's not there yet. And we're waiting on best friend. And best friend doesn't show up. And mom says, this is a sign. And you got all the caseworkers going, we can't let this thing collapse. We got to get this together. Mom says, this is a sign. If I can't have three people testify in court that I love my children, I refuse. They're getting ready to go. I walk over to her and I said, hey, how many days did we sit there in the pre-meetings before we went out to sell meat with you telling me how much you love your kids? How many visits have we done together? Let me be the third person. And she said, okay. And so her mom stood up, her sister stood up, I stood up, sobbed my eyes out. She loves these kids. And so we have that on record now. That's on the court record of me testifying how much the birth mom and birth dad love the kids. And that was it. Termination was done, and we adopted two kids. Now, their journey has been a wild, wild journey, especially David. Krista has been a, you know, pretty average, though extraordinary to me, daughter. But David has been in and out of institutions, his autism. He's functioning as far as speaking, but he lives in a group home and down in Provo, and he'll never live on his own. But he's had a difficult time of figuring things out, but he's an amazing, amazing young man. So that should be the end of our adoption story. We ended up having a biological son, Miles, not long thereafter. So we had three kids very young in our home. And then a few years later, we had our son, Keaton, who is still our baby. And we thought that was it. I mean, that was, we're done. That's our four. More than I wanted. So we are done. Unfortunately, God has a way of kind of directing things. And I was sitting in church. In fact, my son, they had problems with his medications and he was having so many behavioral issues. So David, when he was, I don't know, maybe 5 years old, something like that, he he was older than that, probably eight, but he was at the Utah State Hospital. They were trying to figure out his medications, his behavioral issues. They were really trying to diagnose him. He was, over the course of his life, he was diagnosed with fetal alcohol, with post-traumatic stress disorder, with autism, with bipolar. He's been so like, what do you treat, right, to help his behaviors the most? So anyway, they had church up there and I would go up every Sunday and I'd sit in church with him. And I'm sitting in church and I heard a voice. Someone was speaking. It wasn't their voice that I heard, but someone was speaking. And the person speaking said, those of you who are here working with these kids, you are called to this work. And as soon as he said that, I heard a voice. I know it was the Spirit of God. And it said, are you ready for this? You will adopt a teenage daughter. And not, I mean, and that's because I am not a very smart man, Jason. I am not the brightest guy. And so sometimes God has to speak to me in no uncertain terms, no nuance. I got home thinking, how am I going to tell my wife about this? Finally, I just said, funny thing, you know, we're sitting in church and guess what? We're to adopt a teenage daughter. And my wife said, I know. I've been looking for weeks. I know we're supposed to adopt a teenage daughter. And to which I replied very maturely, because, you know, my wife has to be better than I am. I already know this. So we put into the state that we were willing to adopt a teenage girl. And that's a wonderful blessing because by the time kids are teenagers, very hard to get them adopted. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating, the spiritual journey of it, because they would call us up and say, hey, we've got a girl. Her name is Jennifer, whatever. We'd go, well, that doesn't sound right. And I know that sounds weird, but we'd go, that doesn't sound right, but let's go check her file. We would never meet the kids because I think that's just cruel. Mm-hmm. If you're not really ready to make the leap. But we would go check the files and we'd just say, it doesn't feel right. One day I was on a business trip. By this time I had an actual career, by the way. I was actually making money and my wife was staying home. And my wife called me up one day and she said, hey, they've got another girl for us. Her name is Portia. And I said, that's her. And my wife said, I know. And we knew. I didn't need to check her file, but I did. Then she showed up and I met her and that was our daughter. And she was 13 years old. She probably went through the worst time. Her dad just kind of decided that he didn't want to be a part of her life. He had moved on and started another family. Her mom had massive addiction problems and ultimately ended up passing away a few years later, unfortunately. Oh. But Portia came to us with a lot going on. I mean, just had been through a nightmare. And that's a lot to deal with, but we ended up adopting Portia and she's been a huge blessing. She was 13. She's 30 now. Yeah. I have a 30-year-old daughter. She turned 30 last month. And I can get in later to some of the things that we've been through, but moving the story along again, we're done. That's
you're done.
It.
Yeah, that's enough. Yeah. You're done.
Every
right?
time.
You're
done. Every time we're done. Yeah. And then my wife calls me up and says, hey, I just got a call from the state. There's a 9-year-old little boy named named JC, and they cannot find a home for him. And they're out of room at the house where he's at. They really need a home. And at this point, I've learned the lesson that, you know what? I don't need to go through a big dramatic walk in the rain. I just, you know, I basically knelt down and said, look, Heavenly Father, if this is it, just great, whatever. We have the room. By this time we had bought a nice big house. And I just said, you know, we have the room. Great. Let's bring him in. And JC came from, again, just a terrific, horrific background of abuse, you know, and not his parents didn't abuse him. I want to be clear. When I say abuse, more like his parents were addicts and were in and out of prison. And they taught him to steal when he was young. You know, he actually took the keys from a lady at church. His grandma had taken him to church, and he snuck down an aisle, took keys out of a lady's purse, went out to the parking lot, figured out what car was hers, and took it on a joyride when he was 7 years old. So he had not Grand Theft Auto, but basically Grand Theft Auto when he was as a 7-year old. I'll tell you, the blessing of JC is that my wife one day, after he was just a foster kid, he wasn't adopted yet, but you have to be foster parents for 6 months. He was a foster kid, and my wife says, I want to go meet with his parents at a park. And I was out of town on a business trip, but she said, I want to meet with them at a park, and I want to take photos. I want to get good photos of JC with his parents. I just feel this need. She went and bought a bunch of sandwiches. They met at a park. She took a whole bunch of photos. And afterward, I was like, well, that's probably going to be a good thing, you know, for him to see that we always try to show we love the kids' parents. You know, it's a big deal. Well, they got back from that. And about 3 weeks later, all of a sudden, out of the blue, JC's mom passed away. We didn't see that coming. She died of complications. We think, you know, probably drug related, but when she had pneumonia, and suddenly she was gone. JC knows that we love his parents. And that was one of the worst things to go through. And then about a year and a half later, his dad passed away. And these are things that for a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old, suddenly, you know, he had always dreamed that they would be reunited. And so JC has had a rough, rough road. And gosh, do we love that kid. And he is 19 years old now. And so once again, hey, we're done. Don't ever say you're done. Got another call. Hey, we have a 14-year-old girl. By this time, my wife says, hey, I think we've got the room for her. And I'm like, yeah, by the way, we're out of milk. So when you're at the grocery store, will you pick up milk? Like, it was so just, this was number 7. And that's how Chloe came into our life. And Chloe was 14 years old. Again, came from a background of addiction, parents in and out of jail, and a really kind of a rough background. And we brought Chloe into our home. We adore Chloe. She's 23 years old now. And we thought that was it. And Chloe had a lot of struggles when she first moved in. You know, there's a lot to figure out. And then we met Chloe's brother, who's younger. He is 19 now. And with Chloe's brother, he had never gotten adopted. Now, he's pretty severely autistic. Again, speaking, he speaks and has conversations, but he'll never live on his own. And he came to some of our family events. We kind of got to know him a little bit. Well, then we got a call from his social worker that said, hey, he's 18 now. He's about to graduate high school. He's timing out of the system. He never got adopted. And that means that Christmas, birthdays, he just doesn't really have anyone. What do you think? And we said, well, we love Cameron. So sure. I said, I didn't even know you could adopt an 18-year-old.
I didn't either.
You can actually adopt anyone who's legally free, like anyone who's like, but you have to be 10 years older than they are. So theoretically, an 80-year-old could adopt a 65-year-old. Like they just have to be 10 years younger than you are. And so we adopted an 18-year-old, Cameron, who's Chloe's brother. That made Chloe's dreams just come true. Chloe, when we told her, she said she had been praying about it. She didn't want to bring it up. I didn't know how much it meant to Chloe. So Cameron has never actually lived with us. He moved from a foster home into a group home, but he comes over all the time. We had him over. We have him over very regularly for dinner, and we talk to him 2-3 times a week. And he calls us mom and dad. We tell him we love him, tells us he loves us and Christmas and all that stuff. And he was number 8. I'm never, ever going to say we're done again, but I think we're done. But as I'm getting a little bit older. So that's our 8 kids, and they're incredibly spiritual components to all of it. The funny thing is we've got David and Krista, who are biological siblings. We have our sons, biologically, Miles and Keaton, who are siblings. We have Chloe and Cameron, who are siblings. And then we've got Portia and JC, who just kind of team up because, you know, they have to, they're like, hey, we're a team also. So it's, and Jason, it's been a wild ride. It's not what we expected at all. But it has been a beautiful ride.
It sounds like it. And it sounds like God's hand wasn't just, you know, in the details of this, but was maneuvering the pieces of this. I mean, you can see it at every step, from you walking around a rainy baseball diamond to adopting an 18-year-old. What a blessing, and so fascinating that you know, God chose your family to be the vehicle of delivering blessings to these children. You know, you and your wife have been tremendous influences in their lives, but ultimately all good comes from God, right? And so how great that he looked down on you and Vanessa and said, this is the family, that this is a family that I can trust, that can be leaned on, and that knows or will learn to really know and recognize my voice. You know, when they come asking, I'll be ready to answer. And that's just, I love that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And I suspect during that break, Sean, you and I are going to talk about whether or not you can adopt me. I don't know who's older. I might be, maybe I'll adopt you, but we're
adopting you. That's actually why I wanted to be on the podcast, was to announce to the world we are adopting Jason Wright. So
breaking news on Right Where You Are. Oh heavens, I would gladly be adopted. It sounds like you've got a big beautiful home. The kids are starting to head off into their own. So it sounds like
it's the only way I'm ever going to have grandkids is to have your kids as grandkids. So adoption's
You don't even have to adopt me to take my kids. Trust me. Where do I deliver them? How does that work? I'll be there in 3 hours.
I understand.
All right. We'll be right back, folks.
Hey, friends, let me take just a second to tell you about Buzzsprout. Buzzsprout is, of course, our podcast host and platform. And look, I researched every imaginable option for this podcast for months, including starting some trials at a few of them. And I just found that absolutely Buzzsprout was the right fit. Following the link in the show notes lets Buzzsprout know that we sent you here at Right Where You Are. It gets you a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for one of their paid plans. And of course, it helps support this show. Start with whatever gear you already have. You don't need to spend a lot of money. You just need a quiet space and a mic. It really is that simple. If you have ever thought about starting a podcast, now is the time. And I promise you that Buzzsprout is the right partner. They make sure that your show gets listed in every major podcast platform. They give you a great looking podcast website. They give you all kinds of analytics and data that tell you how people are listening and where they're listening, and all sorts of tools to promote your episodes. For me personally, their support is probably the highlight. Their support is so fast. Sometimes it feels like I get responses back to questions before I have even sent them. So, fun fact, nearly 500 people every single day start a podcast on Buzzsprout, and there's a reason why. So go find out what all the, wait for it, buzz is about at Buzzsprout.
Okay, Sean, we're back, and I want to tell you one of my favorite people in the world. His name is Todd Jensen. I'm sure he's also listening right now. Right, Todd? You're listening somewhere. Todd was adopted as an infant, just a day or two old, and he's known his entire life that he was adopted. He absolutely loved and adored and cherished his his adopted mother and father. His father passed away. His mother is still living, and she's his mom. In every way, she is his mother, right? But he has tried, particularly with the, you know, this innovation behind FamilySearch and all of the DNA services that are available out there, to find his birth mother, to maybe get some answers to even just basic health questions, right? And he's had no luck. I mean, he has had just no leads at all. What? Now, I know that your story is a little bit different because your children didn't come in to your home as infants, and you know very well and loved and respected and cared for their birth parents. But do you have any advice for my friend or others who maybe are desiring, even if they know who their birth parents are, but those relationships are maybe fractured and tenuous? What advice do you have for them to reconnect if they desire to their birth parent, particularly their birth mother?
Yeah, I think if you feel that drive, you should pursue that. And I think that I'm probably better suited to give advice to adoptive parents, because that can stir up some emotions of, you know, am I not enough? The one lesson, the great lesson that my wife and I learned very early on is that adoption is not about us. We will receive blessings. We will learn lessons, but that it's not for us. It is for the children. And so if you feel that drive, if you feel the need in order to be complete, by all means, go and find them. But I will say, having seen some of our kids reconnect with their birth families, set a realistic expectation as to what that will be. If you go into it with the only goal being, I just want to know, that's a fantastic goal. And yeah, I want to understand, do we have a history of, you know, breast cancer or of heart disease or whatever it is? I think that's a really worthy goal. And then also just, I want to close that chapter. I just want to know. But if you go into it, unfortunately, we have one of our children who kind of thought, oh, I'm going to be able to go back and it's going to be magic. You know, the state was wrong. Everyone was wrong. And this child went back to their birth parents after they turned 18. And unfortunately, I got a call from the police that they lived about 3 hours away, that there had been a massive fight that had broken out between them, and arrests were made, and people were in shelters, and I had to go down and rescue this child of mine. And on the drive back, this particular child was crying, saying, I don't know. I just thought it was going to be so different. And so go in with a realistic expectation. It could be absolutely wonderful and it could be really tough. But I say pursue it. But my bigger advice would be for adoptive parents, birth parents and birth families are not a threat to you. They're an extension. They are your family. If you have adopted this child, you cannot deny the blood. The blood is real, and there's a real bond there, and it makes your family special. So encourage your children. And we've always said that. We've always said, look, that's your family also. We are all family, and we encourage it, but with realistic expectations. So as our kids got older, we were more and more real about, hey, your uncle who loves you is also this, and you need to know that. We need to protect you going in, or your mom or your dad. Here's the real backstory. We've read the files. And so love them. We love them. We honor them, but go in with a realistic expectation. But then also, if it crashes and burns and if there's pain, remember you've built those bonds. And so be there if there is that pain, if there is after that discovery that, my gosh, I opened a wound that I didn't even know I had. Be there and be ready to put salve on the wounds, because you are the mom and dad. That's your role.
That is such great advice. And I'm sitting here thinking you really need to write a book. whether you knew this was coming or not in your life, and clearly you didn't, you know, God had other plans for you. You could be such a powerful and are such a powerful voice and advocate for adoption and doing it the right way. So if you ever write a book, Sean Rapier, I'm in line. I am in line.
I will be calling you for all the advice because I have no clue how to write a book. So
I think your voice is unique and powerful. And speaking of books, I'm curious if there were one story or one moment, some quick anecdote from your life, from your journey raising these children with your wife. And maybe someone says, you know, what makes it all worthwhile? Someone says, why are you really doing this? And your mind just goes to one story or experience. What is it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the one experience, when one of our sons, when his dad passed away, I was the one who had to tell him. And this was my son whose mom had already passed away. And he, more than anyone, you know, most of our kids recognized that their parents couldn't handle them and were kind of glad to be out of that situation, but this one didn't. And it was always his dream. I'm going to go back and live with my parents and it's all going to be perfect. And his mom had already passed away. And I had to sit down and tell him that now his birth dad had passed away. And I'm at that point telling an 11-year-old boy, your dreams are shattered. This is it. And I sat down with him across on the couch and told him. And once I told him, he immediately started bawling, of course. And then he climbed over and sat in my lap. And I held him for almost an hour as we cried together. And he has been a tough one. He has been probably the toughest of all of our kids. But I still have that moment. And now maybe it could have been a social worker or anyone that he would have climbed to. But he climbed to me and he sat with me for an hour as we cried together. And that might be a funny one to pick out because it's not necessarily rewarding. But I feel like that is a microcosm of who I am as dad. I've watched our children as they've gone off, and some of them have been in jail. And some of them have been homeless, and some of them are doing extraordinarily well. In fact, right now, knock on wood, they're all doing pretty well. But as they have told me off and told me to take a hike and that they never want to speak to me again, and boy, am I being kind and censored with my language right now, you know, and told me they've hated me or whatever, when their lives fall apart, they come back to me. And I think that, Jason, I think there's godliness in that we do the same thing. You know, our lives fall apart and we have a tendency to, or even when things are going well, we'll have a tendency sometimes to turn our back on God. And then suddenly something devastating happens in our lives and we turn back to him because we know that he's our father. And to have that, and to be able to say, this is a season that they're turning their backs on us or whatever. But then when crisis hits, I'm the first phone call they make. You know, when all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a minute, I'm in this situation and I get the calls of, Dad, I don't know what to do about this job. Or, you know, my roommate's not paying rent. What do I do? And when they need something, I'm Dad. And that to me, I think that one incident kind of highlights it, that through the good and the bad, I'm who they turn to. And that's just a huge blessing to be there for them.
Oh, so many lessons there to be learned. I can just picture that moment and yeah, that connection to heaven and how God is never the one that makes space from us. We're the ones that make space from him. And turn our backs and wander away sometimes for a season. And every time we turn around and show a desire, a willingness to step back, he's there ready to weep with us.
I'll share something that will flip a little bit of how people see things when it comes to adoption. And I mean this. This is not a false humility or whatever. People always say, and I say it to other adoptive parents, you know, that, wow, what a beautiful thing you've done in adoption. But, you know, being a parent is heroic in and of itself, no matter how your kids get to you. But people say, as you said earlier, you know, oh, what a blessing you've been to them. And I mean this when I say it, that once you have been through the process, you know I've lost my temper before. I know I've gotten frustrated. I know that, you know, there are times where I just don't understand. These kids have been through, you know, one of my kids told me that he remembered a time when he was probably 6 or 7 years old, having to get his own breakfast because mom had disappeared and dad was passed out on the floor with a heroin needle in his arm. And so he's making breakfast while his dad's passed out on the floor. I don't know what my kids, I didn't go through that with them. And so there are times where I'm short. And Jason, there will come a day after I have died and after they have died. And as much as people try to pat us on the back and say, you know, what a blessing you are and how great you are and whatever, there will come a time where I will fall on my knees in front of my children. And I will ask their forgiveness because I will see, you know, we'll see clearly, and I will see what they had been through, and I will understand who their souls are, and I will recognize and understand what they had been through. And I will ask for their forgiveness for my shortcomings, and will recognize that I was the one in need the entire time, that this was God's way of refining me. And it's unfortunate that they had to go through that with me to help me figure out God's love. Someone so imperfect, and me and my wife, that for us, this was our training. This was our godly training. And it's unfortunate that they had to be the ones to train us. And I will ask for their forgiveness. And it's a very deep thing. Family is very, very deep.
I just my mind goes to your two biological children, and particularly given what you've just shared and this deep eternal love that you have for your adopted children, have your two biological children felt different? Have there been struggles? Has there been a sense of, has there been friction? Tell us a little bit about sort of that dynamic of having two that share the blood, and then the, you know, the six that share the bond, but not.
Yeah. Blood. Yeah. I would say, you know, you can't have eight children without having friction, no matter what. Mm-hmm. Growing up, you know, there was a wonderful show called Eight Is Enough. They had friction, you know, Tommy would fight with Nicholas from time to time. And, but the truth is, you know, it's funny when we talk to our kids, especially our older of our biological sons, he was like, you know, people would ask, well, what's it like, you know, and he'd say, as opposed to what, you know, he never knew anything else growing up, and neither did our youngest. I think our older son took more of the brunt of it just because his entire life, you know, right now, our youngest, he's home alone. He's the only kid left at home. So he didn't see it all up close as much as our older son. But there was definitely friction. I mean, you can't be, you know, 8 years old and watching your older brother who's 12 be taken away in handcuffs for smashing holes in the wall and threatening to kill everyone in the house without that being trauma. And I think that our two biological sons, they came prepared for this. They came blessed for this. But it's caused, you know, there's no question. I mean, it's caused difficulty, and to figure out what's my place in this. And the adopted kids get a lot of attention, you know, I mean, that's by nature. They demand it. To your question, was there friction? If you're ever on our street and you need Wi-Fi, just look for the Wi-Fi password, Dysfunction Junction. That is the name of our home. We call our home Dysfunction Junction. But at the same time, we try to also have really strong one-on-one relationships with them. And there were times, especially when, you know, when the adopted kids were going through really major bad times, there were times where we would do really specific things with our kids. And one of the things that I would do, and that held true with adopted kids as well as our biological kids, they're called, the kids named it, daddy trips. They are one-on-one trips I do with my kids to Disneyland. Disneyland is the ultimate equalizer. I can take my kids who are 25 or my kids who are 5 or kids with learning disabilities, kids without, and it's a different experience with each of them. But we go to Disneyland, just me and one kid. And that gives us an opportunity to bond, to open up in between rides. We're walking around, we're having lunch, whatever it is. And that gives us an opportunity. And I tried to just really build one-on-one relationships. And then also to be really blunt and really open. And hey, how are you feeling about all this? You know, and sometimes it would be massive trauma where I'm literally having to restrain one of the kids who's threatening to kill me after he just broke a couch, you know, or whatever. And this 7-year-old has to see this. How do you decompress after that? And we talk about it and try to process it and try to, you know, do the best that we can. At the same time, it's been a blessing in that they have seen the world through different eyes. They have a deeper understanding of humanity from seeing all of their siblings. And like any sibling, some of them are closer than others. You know, our oldest biological son is very close to one of our adopted daughters. Like, they're totally good friends. They get together and play games and stuff. And then two of our adopted daughters are very close. One of our adopted daughters doesn't really engage with the rest of the kids much. She's made the decision that it's sort of like her and us. She's close to us, but not with the other kids. But what family isn't like that? And yeah. So I think for our biological kids, I hope it's been a blessing. I know it's been a trial, but I think that as they get older, they appreciate more. But they've come to us, and like my oldest son came, my older biological son, he came to me and he said, "Dad, sometimes I just think about it. What a wild ride. What a wild ride we had." So the only thing we can do at the end of it is I'm always available to talk. I always told my kids, both of my biological kids, as well as our adopted kids, we're here to pay for therapy if you need it. I mean, truthfully, we're here and we hope you get whatever help you need. You know, my worry was always, are the biological kids getting enough attention? Because those adopted kids who come from bad backgrounds, they will demand it. How do we make sure that we're giving equal attention to everybody?
I can't even begin to imagine what that struggle to find balance would be like. I have, you know, 4 children, 2 that are out of the house and off adulting in the world, and 2 rather rambunctious teenage boys still at home. And, you know, the 2 oldest and my oldest husband and kids have been in town. So we've had the whole group here for a couple of weeks. And even just over the last couple of days, there have been a few experiences where I can look around the room and just tell, even as adults, they're looking around like, wait a minute, I need a minute. You know, I want to go for ice cream with mom, or I want to go, you know, for a ride in dad's car with him. And it's so interesting how we do our best and trust that the Lord is going to ultimately, he'll give us all the tools we need to find the right balance. And we're going to mess it up because that's called parenting. But he never messes it up if we're willing to kind of lean on him. And as we switch gears, I just want to just kind of make clear, we're just going to assume that the adoption goes through for me. Will I also get a Disney trip? Like, how does that work?
You get it right away. It's within the first month we go.
Okay.
We go do it. So get it on your calendar. Okay. Let's get the adoption through first. How are we going to break it to your kids? How are we going to break it to my kids? Hey, you've got a much, much older sibling now.
Well, I can tell you my kids are not listening to the podcast, so we don't have to worry about that. I'll text them on the family group thread. That's probably
how they'll find out. Perfect.
Speaking of podcasts, tell us a little bit about, I know you've got several. Tell us a little bit about your podcast, where we can find you. And I have seen some of your stuff on YouTube. You're hilarious. I know you don't do quite as much stand-up as you used to, but talk a little bit about that as we transition to our last 2 questions, which I know everyone is looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Sure. 2 things. I mean, first of all, I've been very blessed. I started, needing a job, I started in the consumer electronics industry 24 years ago. I've been very blessed. I'm currently the vice president of sales for a consumer electronics company, and that's been a real blessing. But what's also been a blessing is I have continued to be able to write, and I perform a lot less now, but I'm currently writing for a Las Vegas act right now. I'm writing for a nationally touring stand-up comic. I do a lot of punching up jokes, helping them put together their shows. Mm. I'm writing right now for a national touring speaker who's not comedic, but she basically said, hey, I need some comedy and I have no sense of humor. So I'm helping her punch some of her stuff. But then I also, like, I got to write last year, I got to write a music video for The Killers, the band The Killers.
Wow.
Which was fun. You know, I get to do a lot of interesting projects on the side. But I have three podcasts. One that's very regular that I would highly recommend you go back. What was it? A year and a half ago to Jason Wright's episode. But that podcast is called Latter-day Lives. It's people from our faith who have interesting lives. And we have on actors, writers, directors, but we also have on people who have just overcome things, like people who have overcome obstacles in their lives, just anyone with a fascinating story. We have them on to come tell their story. So that's Latter-day Lives. That's available wherever you get your podcasts. We also do a live podcast with a friend of mine named Ken Craig. He is a comedic actor and improv guy. We do one called Sharing Time. That's a Facebook Live where the audience jumps in. You can find Sharing Time on Facebook, and the audience jumps in and we talk about just primarily life. It's not just people of our faith, but it is a lot of people of our faith. And then the last one is a Disneyland podcast that's very irregular. We'll go sometimes 2 months without an episode and then four episodes in a month. And that's okay with that one. It's called The Castle Collective. And we just talk about Disneyland and our love of Disneyland. So those are my projects.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. So let me just say, because as you and I have discussed previously, I've got listeners of lots of different faiths.
Right.
The Latter-day Lives podcast, though it does feature members of our faith, you will be inspired by their stories. It is about so much more than church, you know, capital C. It's about gospel and goodness and miracles. And this is the kind of discussion we've had today.
Yeah.
That very much might happen if the chairs were reversed on Latter-day Lives. So I highly recommend that.
I appreciate it.
That to folks. It's a lot of fun. And
it's very little about our actual faith. It's more about faith and really just the amazing people who are Christians, who are believers, and the things they're doing to change the world. That's really it.
And that's really what we've tried to accomplish here with Right Where You Are as well, is build a community that has believers and frankly non-believers from across the spectrum who are just unified by goodness. Now, some of us might be unified by God, and some of us might be unified by his gospel or his restoration or his or our shared faith. But some of us, I know, I won't embarrass them, but I know a few people listening right now who are proud atheists who listen to the show because we are bound by kindness. They believe that the way to a happy life is a kind life. And so we try to appeal across that spectrum. And I know that you very much do the same thing.
For sure.
So we arrive at my favorite two questions. And honestly, I go back and as I review episodes from past weeks, I always go back to this closing section of the podcast because I just find it so thoroughly fascinating. So the first of these two questions is about the name of the podcast, Right Where You Are, which you and I actually talked a little bit about before we had announced it to the world. I'm curious, of course, there's no right answer or wrong answer to this, but what does Right Where You Are mean to a guy like Sean Rapier?
So what I love about Right Where You Are, and I told you, I loved it from go. I just think it's an amazing name. It's fantastic. But what I love about Right Where You Are is I think that now, especially in 2021, we have this wrong notion that things are beyond our control, that how can I make the world a better place? I can't influence the world. You know, I can't change what's happening in the Middle East or what's happening with climate change or what's happening, whatever gives us anxiety. But then there's also this, well, maybe I do want to make a difference. So here goes a repost on Facebook. Great, I've made a difference. Well, neither of those things are right where you are. Yeah, maybe I can't influence what's happening in foreign policy in my current situation. And maybe I can't, you know, whatever, change the big picture, which, by the way, my mom, who's a very funny, wonderful woman, she used to say in our marriage, she said, your father is in charge of the big, important things. And I'm just the little woman who makes the little decisions. I decide the little things like what job your dad will have, where we live, what cars we drive. Your dad's in charge of solving global warming and all the big stuff. You know?
I can relate. I can relate in my marriage.
But the truth is, if we get away from, hey, I'm going to change the world by posting on Facebook, we look around, there are people in need and even in people in crisis right where we are that no one else can reach. You know, that the president of the United States and that, you know, global leaders can't reach my neighbor. And so if we will lift our heads up away from our computer screens and our phones and go for a walk in our neighborhood and actually stop and talk to people as they are watering their lawns, or just be aware, just noticing. And especially, I've been focused lately on stillness and quietness. And it's amazing when I take my AirPods out of my ears, how much God wants to speak to me and direct my life. And there is more to do around me than I have time to do. And that to me is what right where you are means. It's look around, put your head up, look around and see in your own neighborhood, in your own congregation, in your own community, and make that difference. That will do more than that repost about COVID or about, you know, Afghanistan or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, heavens. Yes. Amen. Amen. And amen. Imagine a world where hundreds and thousands and millions or billions of us every single day walk out our front door with that attitude. I can't change all of those big picture problems in my little neighborhood today, but I can do one thing. And that might be saying hello to my elderly neighbor who hasn't been spoken to in 2 weeks, or striking up a conversation in the post office, you know, in the line. If we all just did that, it just took one moment like that every day. Oh my goodness, we would change the big picture problems, I think, over time. So, all right.
I would also, hang on, one more thing. Sorry, one more thing I would throw out there. We fall into a trap of wanting to serve the needy, and we need to serve the servants too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. So your pastor, your priest, your bishop, your mayor, your caretaker, the person who seemingly has everything together, who's doing all the serving, check on them, because sometimes they are the ones who are in the most need because they're so busy serving and people just think, hey, they got everything together. To me, that's a big part of right where you are, is figuring out how can I serve the servants and serve those who are holding other people up.
Yeah, great reminder. So true. I have certainly seen that in my own life. So we come to the end. I'm curious to know, you know, years from now, as the colors of this conversation sort of dim and fade a bit, if there were just one thing that you would want people to remember, not just about this episode of a podcast, but about you, your family, your journey, your career, what would that one thing be that you would most want people to have sort of as an anchor memory to you for the rest of their lives? What is Sean Rapier's one thing?
So this may be a kind of an odd answer, because I feel like we all have different gifts. We all have different talents. And I think one thing that's undervalued is laughter. And I hope, and I think, and I hope that when people look back, they will say, he made us laugh. And that is, I am not a smart man at all. I'm not a scholar. I'm not I sometimes, you know, I have trouble. I have ADD. I have a hard time paying attention sometimes. But I was blessed with wit. And so I hope that people will look back one day and say, you know what? He was there to make us laugh. And sometimes in remarkably difficult situations. Now there's loud laughter that we want to avoid. There's a time and a place for it. But sometimes, you know, sometimes laughter, and I think we undervalue the importance of humor. I learned it from my father, and I'll finish with this story that I'll never forget. I was 17 years old, and this was the 80s, and I had the punk rock hair and the stupid, I mean, I looked like an idiot, and fashion was really something at the time, and I was going to work at a bookstore, and I had like a bowler hat, like a 1920s bowler hat of all things that I decided to wear to work. And my father, being a, you know, normal conservative guy, he said, "Are you actually going to wear that hat to work?" Well, of course I was. I was walking out to work. So of course I'm wearing the hat to work, Dad. Like, why are you stirring this up? And I said, "Yes, what is the problem?" And he goes, "Well, it looks kind of stupid." And I said, "Oh, well, you don't know fashion." And it turned into a big fight. I mean, a knockdown, drag out, yelling at each other. "You don't know anything. I'm out of here." Slam the door. And I wore my stupid looking bowler hat to work. I went out with friends that night. I got back very late, midnight, 1 in the morning, whatever. And there was a yellow sticky note on my door. And it was in my dad's writing. And he had gone to bed long before, but it said, "Sean, I'm so sorry about my rude remarks about your hat. It is a nice hat. When I die, please bury the hat with me." And my father and I never spoke of the hat again, and we never had to, because he used humor. I know it was a stupid hat now, and at the time I probably knew it was kind of stupid, but what I knew was that he loved me. And if he had sat me down and said, "Sean, I want to talk about yesterday, you know, we really need to whatever, it would have never had the impact that that statement had. And I think humor can be a real gift. It can be a way to deal with things. And for people who are naturally have a sense of humor, it's a blessing. And I hope people look back and go, you know what? In tough times, Sean was always there for a laugh. That's what I hope.
I love that story. And I hope that you'll consider, as the name of your book, Bowler Hats and Sticky Notes.
My journey through parenting.
Oh, that's so great. Sean, I will obviously will include all of your details, where to find you, where to enjoy all of your great content in the show notes for this episode. And thank you for being the kind of person that other people want to be around, that other people want to talk to and to hear from. The world needs a lot more Sean Rapiers in it. And thank you for giving me some time on the podcast today.
Thank you for your goodness, Jason. And thank you for being such a light. You know, you inspire so many, and this podcast is just an extension of that. And, you know, I'm a number one Jason Wright super fan, so I appreciate it.
Well, I'm grateful for you, and I will be, we'll talk paperwork on the adoption here when we end the podcast.
I already filed it by email while we were talking, so it's on its way.
Excellent. I'll check my inbox. Thanks again.
Thank you for joining us on Right Where You Are. For more information about Jason and his projects, visit him online at jasonfwright.com or on social media at facebook.com/JFWBooks or on Instagram at Jason F. Wright. And be sure to subscribe to Right Where You Are, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Wright Media Productions, copyright 2021 by Jason F. Wright. All rights reserved.